I'm Mary Nichols, Dean of the College of Continuing Education, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to tonight's discussion of the Solar Decathlon. Last month, the University of Minnesota participated for the very first time in the United States Department of Energy's Solar Decathlon competition in Washington, D.C. I know there was at least one member of the audience who was actually in Washington. All right, there you go. Our entry, called the Icon House, took fifth place overall. An impressive showing under any circumstances, but a truly remarkable feat for first-time participants in this really rigorous international competition. Icon House was the result of 2 full years of intensive work by 150 University of Minnesota students in disciplines ranging from architecture and sustainable design to engineering and construction management. And some of these students may actually be with us this evening, and I'd like them to stand so that we can congratulate you. Are you here with us? A few of you? All right. Congratulations. That was fantastic. During the Solar Decathlon, each team was judged on 10 different categories, including home entertainment, thus the decathlon. This contest gauges whether the house has what it takes to accommodate the pleasures of real home life, such as sharing meals with family and friends. On this contest, the University of Minnesota took third place with menus featuring iconic Minnesota ingredients created by Patrice Johnson. Patrice was asked to join the Icon team not only because of her fantastic cooking skills, but because of her research in food studies here at the university. Patrice is currently writing her master's thesis on Swedish immigrant foodways in Minnesota through our own College of Continuing Education's Master of Liberal Studies program. So this booklet you received this evening, she's shared her recipes that she created for this contest. Patrice, would you please stand so that we can thank you and congratulate you too? Right there. Thank you. Some of you may recall that at last April's Headliners, project manager Ann Johnson gave us a preview on the construction and design of the university's solar house. So tonight, we're pleased to welcome architect Peter Hilger, who's going to recount the team's adventure in making that Icon House a reality. Peter Hilger is an architect by training, a builder by passion, and a teacher at heart, and I know that to be true. He served as a faculty member in the College of Continuing Education's Construction Management Program since its inception in 1997, and also teaches in the University of Minnesota's Civil Engineering Program and the College of Design. He earned a BS in Architecture from Georgia Tech and a Master of Architecture degree from the University of Oregon, and he's a member of the American Institute of Architects. He's worked for design firms in Georgia, Oregon, and Minnesota since 1978, and in 2007, he entered solo practice. As an architect and construction manager, as well as a business owner, Peter brings a wealth of expertise to our classrooms. He also advises students in a variety of settings, both at the university and in trade associations. For the past 2 years, Peter has served as an advisor to the students constructing the university's solar house. And in recognition of his many contributions as an instructor and an advisor, I'm proud to say that he's just been named the winner of the College of Continuing Education's 2009 Distinguished Educator Award. Congratulations, Peter. Please join me in welcoming Peter Hilger.
Good evening. You know, just because I received this distinguished award, this could be a really tough audience. you could ask some much tougher questions than my students do, but as I would say, bring it on. All right. Well, I'm really honored to be here tonight. It's been 2 years, almost to the day, that Ann Johnson laboriously submitted the grant request to the Department of Energy and tried to corral the cats that make up the university into organizing a concerted effort to bring a house to Washington, D.C. this year. I believe, and I don't think Anne is here yet, but it's too early for her to be here typically. She usually runs late. and she knows that. Anne would say that she probably thought at the time that there wasn't a great hope that we would actually make it. Well, actually, I see that she just walked in the back room. So welcome, Anne. We'll have an opportunity to recognize her. But anyway, so 2 years ago, we went through this and tried to get everybody organized. At about the same time, I was teaching a class in the graduate program at the College of Design, a fairly mundane class in contracts and stuff like that, when one of my students came to the front of the class and said she'd like to make an announcement and asked if any students would be interested in working on this project called the Solar Decathlon. And I'm not sure that the other 40 students in the class showed as much interest as I did at the time, because I was really curious about it, and I said to her, and you'll be introduced to her in a moment, that, yes, I'm kind of curious about this. I would be interested. But you see, I was an old guy with a beard, and I think she was really looking for a younger set. So I proceeded to fade myself into the background of the program while it went through the design. So that was 2 years ago. Well, let's fast forward. Dean Nichols sort of gave you a very brief overview of the Solar Decathlon project, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But she also jumped right to the conclusion, which normally a speaker would sort of hold that suspense until the end. It's okay. She would hold that suspense to the end, but I'm gonna actually proceed, and I'm going to give you the ending first, okay, because that's already been sort of let out of the bag. I'm going to talk a little bit about the design concept. How did we get there? How did we go from 2 years ago to Washington, D.C.? But the primary focus of my discussion is to talk about the journey. As I said, this is a view from the trenches. I was not one of the people that was sort of on the forefront of this project. I like to consider myself having been in the background, sort of talking to students one-on-one, reviewing things as they came up, sort of like much like a theater stagehand would be off on the side wearing black. That's how I pictured myself in this project. And I think I succeeded in that respect. So being asked to speak here tonight is taking me a little bit out of my element on the sidelines, and I appreciate that opportunity. So this is all about the journey to D.C. and back. Well, why Solar Decathlon? And I don't expect you to read this, but Solar Decathlon basically publishes their objectives. And to make about 400 words really short here, their whole mission is education. Education not only for the students, but education for the public at large. The 2009 Solar Decathlon was the fourth event. Everywhere we turned, we heard about how this fourth event is already a bar higher than the third event, which was a bar higher than the second event. So it was quite daunting to find out 2 years ago that out of, I believe, 55 applications, University of Minnesota was one of 20 to be selected for the first time. So this was really an honor. So their whole purpose is about education, and I could tell you, having been in D.C. and watched how many people circulated the mall as this house was being erected, as it was being displayed, and even as it was being taken down, I can say that the public education outreach was definitely there. I believe it was indicated that they had record attendance. So, getting back to the ending first, these are the final standings. Team Germany is the defending champion, and they came back. But this time, we gave them a run for the money. And I would say the top five gave them a run for the money, because when you look at the scoring chart, you can see that Minnesota, being in number five there, is really not that far behind the leader. And that is a tremendous accomplishment for a first-time entry into this program. You can see we had teams ranging from Germany, Puerto Rico, two teams from Canada, one from Spain. Obviously, the logistics that these teams had to go through just to get their houses down to D.C. makes our effort pale, I think, by comparison. But we also had a lot of other teams, some co-Big Ten teams, Illinois and Ohio State, to name a few. Iowa State was in there, Virginia Tech, some great, great, great schools. The competition, folks, was enormous, and it was not to be taken lightly. In spite of the best efforts of some of our students during the course of the design and so forth to kind of take that competition a little too lightly, you know, don't get so cocky. That's kind of what I was thinking about and telling occasionally, because we're going to have tough competition this, and we did. And the fact that we got where we did with number five was outstanding, and I'll talk about that a little bit more. Specifically, how we did in the contest, there were 10 contests in the decathlon, hence, of course, the word. Mary already indicated the home entertainment one, which we did, as you can see, very, very well. We got third place in home entertainment. But you can kind of see that of the rankings of our scores, we only had one score that was in the bottom 10. Everything else was a top 10 finish. That was outstanding. And the only reason I understand on the communication side that we didn't do quite as well was, quite frankly, our website. And I know that Dean Nichols would probably agree with me and say that sometimes the politics involved in managing a website at the University of Minnesota, well, let's put it this way, that's talk for a whole nother presentation somewhere down the road. So that's one of the reasons we struggled with our communications, but that's fine. We did well, and these are basically the results of the contest. So let me talk a little bit about the process of design. Now, you all probably maybe heard about the solar decathlon sort of happening. I know Anne earlier this spring sort of spoke to it. Well, this is the process of design as I think the public would perceive it. You design a house, you construct it, you move it. Well, that's a little bit of a head scratcher right there, moving a house. Well, doesn't that make it a mobile home? And then, of course, you compete, and everybody's all smiles every step of the way. That was the objective 2 years ago. That, in fact, wasn't the reality. This is the reality, okay? You design, and you redesign. And one of the challenges with this particular program was we did not have a client. The client was sort of fictional. It was as an eco-centered Gen Xer, okay? I'm not sure exactly what that means, and I'm not sure if they have enough money, quite frankly. But we didn't really have a client, and that's one of the things that I think we've learned and we can talk about later on that sort of challenged us. So there was a lot of design by committee, or consensus, if you will, by the students. And you can just imagine students, I really respect their creative energy and so forth, but sometimes the ability to corral that energy and sort of get it focused, I know was a challenge during the design phase. So we went through design, and really this process, like I say, is supposed to take about 2 years. And you'd think over a period of 2 years you would sort of orderly organize the project so that you would start construction approximately February of this year, and that indeed was the plan, that we were going to start construction in February. As a matter of fact, Ann told me when I raised some concerns about the fact that we will have a lot of student labor on this, and I'm a little concerned that we might be a little challenged to organize and manage a lot of student labor, she said, no problem, we've got lots of students. Okay, well, there's a truth to be said here, and if you don't already realize this, if any of you are faculty members from the past that worked on group projects, 80% of the work gets done by 20% of the students, all right? And managing that 20% is critical. That becomes your core group, and we actually had that. You know, factors of 135 to 150 students were talked about on this project. Frankly, I don't know how many of them there were, but I can tell you easily that we probably had about 30 in the core team that represented that 20%, and that was really encouraging. So back to this little funny cartoon diagram. We're supposed to construct the building starting in February. We're supposed to finish it in June so we can test it. We can bring it outside, and we can cycle through the systems. We can generate a lot of kilowatts, generate some hot water, test the systems, throw towels into the dryer and see how long it takes to dry them. Do all the tests, mimic the contest, and by the time the state fair would roll around, we'd be ready for you. Well, that was the plan. All right. In fact, we never got to the testing phase. All right, the testing phase really never did happen until we got to D.C. So we went immediately from construction to a quick, very, very quick move in early September to a site just a few blocks away here in St. Paul to set the house up outside and at least to give it, you know, a sunburn. And then at least get it fully finished so that we could transport it and know that it all went together. Well, it's amazing that we didn't have students working on the truck going out to D.C. because that's really what happened. So we didn't get to the testing phase, and we actually did have to finish construction in D.C., and I'll show you how that came to be. So let me talk a little bit about the design of the house. I don't want to dwell too much on it. There was a lot that went into the design phase, and we could have a whole separate dialogue on that. But what we were trying to do with this design is to take the standard shape of the house, and you know what it is. You're probably living in one. Triangular roof, square walls. And we're trying to take that shape, and we're trying to just push it over a little bit. We're trying to create a longer slope on the roof facing south, a steeper slope on the roof facing north to generate what we call this iconic shape, a shape that is well adapted to the Minnesota solar environment. And so you can kind of see from this diagram how that was intended to play itself out. We also, as you can see on the lower right-hand side, we're intending to take advantage of the sun not only on the surface of the roof, but also on the surface of the south-facing walls. Because, as I explained to numerous people that came through on tours, it's a hidden asset in Minnesota to take advantage of the walls because our sunlight is so low in the wintertime. And actually, the angle is quite good for solar radiation on that south exposure. So that we are taking advantage of both sides, as you'll see. We went through a lot of modeling, 3D modeling to be sure, as well as computer modeling, and that really helped us to form and solidify some of the ideas for the house. This diagram here is sort of a combination of what I would call the big idea, and actually the student architect labeled it as such, is how the house really goes together. You can see on the bottom is sort of the framework of the house. Lower right here, basically on this part of the house, is basically the shell of the house. This is the part that our construction management team was really proud of because that's the part that they really had to get in, figure out how to do and to build. And then we had a structural system, basically that was defined, that sort of defined the architecture featuring some wood beams here. We had a distribution system of air along a central spine. And then we also had, of course, the photovoltaic array, which consisted of three different systems. And I want to be very quick about this. We have basically solar thermal on the far left-hand side of the house. We have about 20 kW of solar photovoltaic on the roof in the center portion of the house. And then at the very outside, what I call the porch here, basically on that side of the house, was our what do we call bifacial photovoltaic panels. And I'll show you a picture about those in a moment. So this is putting all these elements together. The idea was to come up with an integrated house, a house that could take solar energy, incorporate it into its design in an almost seamless fashion, and not make it look like it was tacked on. That was the concept. That was the fundamental concept of the design. But as we were going through As we were going through that process, we had to make a key decision. And I really found it interesting to sit through some of the meetings about that key decision. How are we going to move an 800-square-foot footprint to Washington, D.C.? How do we slice and dice this thing up? This now becomes its own separate design element. We could either decide on the upper left to sort of cut the house up lengthwise, try to put it together in two pieces, basically what you could call a double wide, maybe. All right. Or we could cut it the other direction and sort of package it up in pieces. All of this has to be managed in the limitations of a truck and, determine how to bring to D.C. But not only how to get it on a truck, how do we put it back together again so it's sealed up? How do we keep water from running through these joints? How do we keep air from filtering out of these joints? Because we're going to be tested by the Department of Energy on our whole air system. I guess I got a little too close. We tested on this air system, so sealing the house up was critically important. And so how we worked out those details was basically one of the roles that I had in the process. My role as sort of the architect early on was not to be the lead on the design. Like I said, I was sort of sitting on the sidelines, and I needed to help the students come up with some details that would allow this house to actually come apart and go back together. My role was to guide. My role was to sit in meetings like I am here on the lower left and help the students understand what we needed to do. And most importantly, how do we stay on schedule with the lack of labor that was coming forth? So that was a critical element. And then finally, the issue of where to build. And perhaps Ann touched about on this in the spring, because I think about that time we were just struggling, trying to find, with the help of facilities here at the university, where can we build this house? And there was talk that we were going to take it off-site, but finally, through heroic efforts on a number of people's part, we found the warehouse. The reuse center here on the University of Minnesota agreed to let us build the house there to move some of their stuff out of the way so we could actually construct the house. But to do so, we needed a big door, all right? This may not look like it, but this is a big door, all right? And we had to get that put in. FabCon was generous to donate some of the materials that went into this. Facilities quickly orchestrated a project to get this built so that we could actually get started on construction. And in April of this year, remember I said February earlier, in April of this year, we got started. And they were stalling the door when we had already started our foundation work. So this door became an important, critical element that cost us somewhere about $90,000, money that we didn't really want to put into the door, but we wanted to put instead into the house. But that's just part of the thing that you go through. So now, what I'd like to do fairly quickly here, because I know you're going to have lots of questions, I'm going to take you on the journey, all right? I'm going to start you in April. I'm going to start you with the construction, and we're going to show you some pictures of how this thing started to come together, the students that worked on it, how we got to D.C., and how we got back again. So it's late April 09. Our house is starting to go together. This was perhaps, at that point in the game, one of the larger crews on the job, two students. All right. So it sort of was happening. I have to tell you, though, that the students were energized. All right. They had a lot of energy. They had a lot of enthusiasm. They just didn't have a lot of time, all right? And so we had to deal with that. We had to work around it. So we were patient. Here they're building the mechanical room on top of a foundation system. And gradually and very slowly over the month of May, the house started to take shape. It started to take form. Remember, we had to build these in their modules, in these separated forms. We had to construct them, and then start to figure out how to pull them together as we were building it, and then take it apart again to move it to St. Paul. You can see a number of our students here. We were framing the truss elements, as I pointed out earlier, which became sort of a part of the iconic shape. The iconic design was to have these exposed trusses as part of the architecture. They became a bit of a struggle. The insulation, it was our bane, but it was also our godsend. This insulation program, as a matter of fact, the design that went into our walls was one of the principal reasons that we achieved a first place in engineering. Our envelope needed this insulation. But it's easy for everybody to say, well, just insulate the walls. Well, what that involved was a contractor coming out and spray foaming all of the cavities. And, of course, when you do that spray foaming, they tend to get, if you want a full cavity, which, by the way, the building official here for the University of Minnesota, which was inspecting it, required a full cavity of spray foam insulation. It had to be full, which means it had to be over full, which means that it all had to be ground off. All right? And so what you can see here is a student working through grinding off the insulation on the top of the roof, because we did it from the top down, so that we could put our roof sheathing on. And that's part of the peculiarities of the design of the house, which I can talk about later on if anybody has any questions about it. But that became a very, very messy and difficult process, but somehow I think the students started to get into it. We had a really neat gizmo, kind of a plane that you just run through that insulation, creates a great mess. They get to wear these funny masks. And they kind of had, I think, a little bit of fun with it, but it was a pain in the butt. Danny Van Grohl, sitting right back here right now. He was our epic box master. He was the one that took charge of our landscaping. Believe it or not, we didn't have to just deliver a house. We had to deliver the environment for the house, the decks, the landscaping, stuff like that. So our landscape architecture students came up with these boxes that were going to have Minnesota native grass in them. Actually, a seed that was going to be, that was hybridized here at the university and going to be planted in these boxes and grown and vibrant and thick and ready to go to Washington, D.C. When we did it. So we had to dispatch Danny here to get these boxes constructed because, you know, the time was right. I think that was about in June or something, late June, when we started these epic boxes. Basically what that is that takes rainwater, runs it through these channels, and the rainwater then percolates up through the soil. So it's quite an interesting system. We had a number of different students, and it's interesting that we didn't have very many women students. And we don't actually have a lot of women students in our construction management program, but we had one dedicated diehard student. I'm sorry that she's not here this evening. That was Heather Brierley. Heather was at this project 2 years ago when it started. She was the construction management student that sort of rallied around our construction management students that didn't quite understand where we were headed on this project anyway to begin with, didn't really know what solar decathlon was, and got them excited about it early on. I worked with her very early on to get the estimates. She was ready to grab the tool belt and start working on this project as soon as she could. She helped us organize the job site. Unfortunately, she couldn't go to Washington, D.C. because she was working on her own construction project, and her daughter was born just a few weeks ago. All right. So anyway, this was the house as it was starting to take shape. Again, you can see kind of the insulation on the gable ends. We now have the roof elements attached to the lower elements as they're starting to sort of fit together. And then finally on September 2nd, we've got to be in D.C. in 30 days, less than 30 days. We're moving it over to St. Paul in pieces, and you can see it still looks like we have tar paper on the outside. That was not part of the architectural vernacular, mind you. We still had a lot of work to do, but we had to move it outside. We had to get our solar photovoltaics on the roof. We had to get the solar thermal up there. We had to make sure it all fit and could get connected together. We had to do a lot of work over in St. Paul. And let me tell you, when the pressure was on, everybody started to come through. When we moved it over to St. Paul and everybody realized we were about 30 days from the deadline here, mind you, we had already passed our testing date, okay? 30 days from the deadline, things had to happen. And actually, this is the time when I think I really grabbed the tool belt as well. Normally, I would try to stay away, let the students do the work, but it was basically at this point all hands on deck, including mine, which I grant you are less experienced than a lot of students when it comes to carpentry and technical skills. Design, I'm okay with. A hammer, well, could use some work there. So we are starting now to formulate the house in St. Paul, to work on the deck elements, to try to finish off that interior. It was really starting to take shape here. We had a deadline looming. We had a lot of siding, and I'll talk about that in a moment. You'll kind of see how that siding became our other bane on this project, one that I personally underestimated the complexities of. And we would sit there and we would schedule. And we would schedule, and we would reschedule. We had one student designated from the project management team whose job was it to do schedules. And she built a beautiful schedule for this project, you know, all on the computer, down to tasks and everything. It became very quickly apparent that we were going to have to scrap that when we were falling farther and farther behind our schedule and instead had to resort to butcher paper, all right? Laid out on the construction table in the reuse center and say, how are we going to get this done day by day right now? I know Craig's sitting back there. When we work through some of those elements, we got to look to tomorrow. We got to look to next week. We've got to figure out how we're going to get this thing done. So a lot of scheduling. And now we're getting close. It's getting towards the end of September, about the third week in September. And, of course, now everybody's starting to see this take shape in St. Paul, including President Brunix. Thank you for that. President Brunix is an ardent supporter of this project, and it was great to have him visit and talk with the students. I was really glad that he talked with the students, and I really wanted the students to talk to him. I'm the one sitting up on the deck, okay, working the saw, all right? Because we still had a lot of work to do, even that evening, to try to get our components taken care of here. So very shortly, literally about a day or two before we were going to tear this house down in this condition right now, tear this house apart and move it to Washington, D.C., we got as many students as we possibly can to come over and at least take a group picture, because I was concerned that at this point there would not be another moment coming where we'd have all the students assembled. So finally, towards the very end of September, we were loading up our last dry box, getting all of our gear headed out towards D.C. The trucks were already on their way. These are basically our three big flatbed trucks with our house components, modules 1, modules 2, modules 3, the lower level and the upper level, the roof, as you'll see in a moment. They were on their way to D.C., leaving September 27th, 28th, due in D.C. at 11 p.m., September 30th. Okay? Big load, slow movers. You've passed them on the highway, I think. All right? So they said, no problem. All right? Well, meanwhile, in D.C., we are setting up our foundations. We dispatched a team. We had one dry box arrive on time that had all of our foundation equipment in there, and we had a group of students setting up our foundation. Our site was marvelously clean, okay? As you can see, there's not a lot of stuff here. We're looking down the distance to the Cornell House, who was our neighbor. But anyway, our foundation team was hard at it because we started, I believe, at 11 o'clock. I wasn't there quite then. We started at 11 o'clock, and we worked through the night to be ready for these trucks to show up. The trucks that did not show up. Okay. So here was Wednesday night. We started our foundation work at 11 p.m. We got an hour grace period from the DOE to start an hour earlier, by the way. Supposed to start October 1st. All right. Our team had potentially, I say potentially, an opportunity to do some sightseeing Thursday, because our foundation was done. I believe it was inspected immediately. I think we were the first house to have our foundation inspected. Why? Well, the inspector could see it. You know, there was nothing else on the site. And so we were waiting and waiting and waiting. Well, I boarded a plane Friday morning, bright and early, and headed out to D.C. because I was planning to go out and help. I had to teach Thursday night, so I couldn't join them. So I joined them up Friday morning, and as I was walking onto the mall, I took this picture. I arrived at about 11:30 that morning. There is our module sitting on the mall. It had just arrived, okay? Now, understand this. We are almost 2 days late. We have not quite 7 days. We really have 6 good days of installation time for the Department of Energy. We're 2 days late. The director made some remark. I hadn't heard this personally, but hearsay said the director said that there is probably no way that Team Minnesota could possibly compete on day one because they don't have a house. Well, I'd like to say we were smug. I would like to tell him differently, but we were also, at this point, I think, a little nervous that where were our houses? Well, the fact of the matter is they were hung up in West Virginia because of road construction, I understand it, or some other such thing that they couldn't pass through. So they were rerouted back through Pennsylvania, then to West Virginia, into Maryland, excuse me. Maryland gave some hang-ups on the permits because it hadn't been pre-permitted. And so they finally got clearance through Maryland, and finally on Friday our house shows up amid sirens, you know, police escort, the last one on the mall. I say, let's make a grand entrance, right? And in fact, I think we did. So, but now it came time for us to prove our worth, to prove our worth as a construction management team. And folks, I'm here to tell you that I think we definitely did that. This is the same morning I arrived. I took these pictures. The house is now being set up. We have the first module, as you see, set. We have the roof being placed on top of that, all right? That's the far eastern module right now. You can see it sort of coming up from the end view. We're fixing that top roof. The foundation is coming out in front of you. You can see that lowly bathroom on the left-hand side. It was definitely a challenge to split this house right through the bathroom and right through the tile. You'll see that in a moment. But lifting these things up, let me tell you, when these houses arrived in D.C., the energy that you could feel just walking onto the mall, not only from the students, but from the other students, the whole sense of energy, the sense of this sort of desperation by 20 schools to get their houses constructed. It was just an amazing sight to see and feel. You could have solved the world's energy problem if you could somehow harness that energy right then and there on the mall. It was terrific. We continue to set these modules. Fascinating to watch. We had a number of people watching us during the process. Of course, I was a little concerned about the clouds that were starting to thicken up. And indeed, they would cause us a little bit of problems later on. But here is a good shot that you can see about the challenges of moving a project in pieces. We have to make some very, very tight connections here between modules, okay, here and here. We have to find ways to get the top to fit to the bottom, all right? How do you do that? We conceived of all kinds of ideas, but the practical matter was we had no idea if they were really going to work. Okay. Now, we did test them a little bit in St. Paul, and they seemed to be working just fine. But we built this whole house without taking it apart until we moved it to St. Paul. Now was the real test. It had been transported, gone over roads. Was it going to arrive in D.C. in the same shape? Only time would tell. And now we were starting to see it come together. So same day, Friday, our houses are coming together. There was a lot of exhaustion. You've got to understand that these students, we were working 3/8, okay? 3 8-hour shifts. That was our plan. I think that plan didn't quite work out on the front end because there was too much energy and too much enthusiasm. And having these house not arrive in time sort of made for everybody wanting to be there when this house came together. So it was great. So I think we got off our schedule pretty quickly. But students being what they are, they will find time to rest, all right? And indeed they do, and a lot of our success and our skill depended on this fellow right here. And I observed this guy often. He spent, the entire day, well into the evening, sitting in his crane, working our modules as they would come down. And I kept thinking, first of all, this guy's well paid. They're professionals at what they do. But I imagine the boredom of waiting for the students and watching this beehive of activity and not being able to do anything until all of a sudden you're called into action. You have to sit up, stand on those controls, and pay attention, and you have to be darn careful and secure about what you're doing. So this guy, it was very important that he did a great job, and they did. So we continued to move these modules into place all afternoon. Finally, in late afternoon, we had a house. It was truly starting to come together. This is finally the west module, the last module coming into place late in the afternoon. It's kind of interesting to see how you swing that module in and drop it into place. Again, sort of tight tolerances. But once we drop it on the foundation, it doesn't just sit there. We have to now jack it into place. We have to basically take this module and push them together. We have to push them against each other and bolt them together. We have to make sure the top seats on the bottom just right. And so here we had some riggers helping us using a jack and pulling this house along the foundation inch by inch until it met its mate. Very, very precise, and it worked. Finally, the last piece for which the crane operator had to hang around, the last piece was our mechanical shed, the part that would have all the guts that would operate the solar thermal system, basically our tanks and so forth, was located in this shed, the one that carried our advertisement from Minnesota all the way down the highways to D.C., the icon shape. So that got set into place. We had to set that so we could basically connect all of our systems together, and almost immediately, in other words, I don't think we had all of these elements together when we had the snorkel lift out in front here and we were starting to set our solar PV panels, our photovoltaic panels. We had to get them in right away. It basically was like clockwork. We were working through the night. This picture was taken about midnight on Friday night. Again, all this happened in that same day, all right? We had instant house. I think the director at this time, I believe the next day, after observing the house into action, made some comment about, I think in his blog, about Minnesota's assembly being legendary. That nobody had been able to come through and bring a house together that quickly. We basically had our units tied together, bolted down, ready to start formulating the inside portion of the house by that same evening, Friday night, one day. We can't say that for a lot of the other teams. So this was truly a legendary performance. We even had some goofballs working late on the module. A unicorn who somehow found himself in exactly the right position. And then, of course, Dan Handeen, who, by the way, was the assistant overall project manager, was manning the snorkel lift with me, and he was pointing to some alien landing sites. I wasn't sure if he was talking about Cornell or the Capitol. Not sure. But anyway, we worked through the night. We had students. We had rain starting to come at this point. We had to get those joints sealed up because they weren't quite sealed yet. We were continuing to jack these, just sort of jockey the foundation a little bit to get the house perfectly level and aligned. And finally, we had this fourth module, the porch, which was not, by itself, was not a prefabricated unit. It was almost impossible to prefabricate this in spite of our best efforts. So we had to build this porch almost from scratch using some prefabricated components during the night. And it basically got done during the night. So the next morning, we could now start on our deck, the landscaping, the yard, if you will. And so, tired as we were, and this picture surely tells that, I could start to see some exhaustion breeding in the students at this point. But now we were starting to see a house. It was starting to take shape. Here you can see all the photovoltaic panels in place, solar thermal on the left, PV in the center, and the bifacials on the far right-hand side over our porch element. But again, a lot of detail work had to be done in putting all this together, connecting everything up, starting to set up for the deck to attach to the building, trying to put our gutters in, installing our BIPV panels, which were all shipped separately. Finally, we had to set the gutter. I mean, think about this. We got this roof. We're going to have water. We got to channel this water into our Epic boxes. So we had to put a gutter. One of the big challenges with gutters, as you know, because yours probably leak too, is that, well, they leak, all right? And so we couldn't afford to have a leaky gutter on this project, so we brought a gutter in one piece in its own special crate that it took about six of us to actually hoist into place and get set. That had to be set so we could finish buttoning up the roof. Now, as we were going through this process, we were being watched. The inspectors hired by the Department of Energy was my worry spot, quite frankly, as one of the team advisors. And I wanted to make sure that as we were putting our plans together, that we made sure that we took care of the inspectors, all right? So anyway, they were all over, and they really treated us very, very well. As a matter of fact, they commented that our piping system was a model, that they were now going to make sure that future schools labeled their pipes, all right, which we had. We had a marvelous piping system. We had this lots of visitors, as I just showed you. We were even raking our Minnesota lawn, which, by the way, the original seeds did not really take very well. Let's forget it. They didn't take it all. We finally had to go get some sod, okay? But it was Minnesota sod. It was good sod. We knew the source. The landscape team, you know, they got it cooking pretty well. But they were continuing to rake. But here now, we were talking about some of the most important schedules for the project, and that was of meals. In other words, you got to keep this workforce fed. On room 503 in the hotel, that was like, you know, our central office in the hotel. It was being used by I don't know how many students constantly, but we had meal schedules posted there. And then we had our chow and our tools all in the same spot on the site. It was a mess, and at this point, I really missed Heather. We needed her organizational skills to separate this tool, but it was a tough challenge to find your drill bit amongst the peanut butter. And finally, you know, we got to thank the trenchmen. And these are the people, these are the what I call the heroes of this project, the students that worked so hard to get this project done. And I don't have all of them, of course, but these were the ones that are out here for setup. And they were remarkable and calm, cool. They were there for the setup. A lot of them weren't there for the startup of the competition. Sheng Yin and Joe. Sheng Yin is the architect, the student design team leader. And the overall student project manager and her husband, Joe was the logistics coordinator. They were remarkable. They had a diehard effort on this project, and I think without them, it's safe to say the project would not have succeeded. About Matt Kuhn. Matt, again, a very quiet, understated student that we had, happened to know something about roofing. Well, we need you, Matt. We had 2 days of rain that dropped 2 inches on our site. We had not a single roof leak. That is a major accomplishment, and he takes all the credit for that. I can tell you that not all the 20 schools, is probably about 15 out of the 20 could not make that claim. All right. Jack Prom, a Regents scholar who is a student who came and basically saved our electrical life. All right. He figured out how to get this electrical work done and connected in a way that I think we would have had a really, really tough challenge pulling this off without him. And he's got some gray hair, so we appreciated his senior leadership as a student. And, of course, Craig, who you've been introduced to already, and who's probably going to sit here and blush right now. But you know what? Craig also is a little bit of a senior guy, only a few years younger than I am, actually. We accept students of his age in our program, by the way. here's that to Craig. He was great. I mean, he had to coordinate the students. He had to manage the project. He had to make sure that we had tools. He had to make sure that we had materials. We had to make sure all these challenges were met and that the students had stuff to do. It was a daunting challenge, and I'm sure one that he's probably anxious or glad to probably be done with, but I'm sure was a knowledgeable, growing experience for him. And over some crab, very overpriced crab in D.C., we talked about the lessons learned on this project going forward. We also had to get water, a real challenge. There was a water marshal on this project because, you know, there's no connection in D.C. There's no connection to sewer. There's no connection to water. You bring your own. Well, they bring the tanker truck and you fill it up. It was quite a challenge, snaking this water pipe around 20 houses. We were also in tight spaces all over the place trying to make connections under the deck. We were in tight places trying to get Dan Handeen to figure out how to set up these display modules. We had occasional breaks for the media where we'd have these crew come out and interview some of our students. It was wonderful. It was a great experience. And again, working through the night. Now we're on Monday. Okay, basically, we need to be done by Wednesday. So we got a lot still to do. But now, Tuesday morning, sunshine comes out. It's starting to take shape. The house is starting to look like something. We're getting there. We're finally starting to take shape. The inside is also taking shape. We have a race to finish this Trespin. I mentioned that a little bit earlier, that siding. We got so many wonderful comments on the siding. That was the one thing that I can truly say I underestimated. I thought, siding, what's so hard about siding? Well, when you take a 4-foot by 10-foot sheet of this manufactured material that's made from recycled paper and wood fiber that's composited with a resin and compressed into a very hard material, and you cut it into about 1.5-inch strips, and you say, let's put those strips on the side here. Oh, my gosh. And they all have to be stainless steel screws with washers, all pre-drilled, all pre-cut. Took us way too long to do. But we finally got it done. That's the principal element we were trying to finish on the outside. Basically, it's a rain screen design that allows water to flow behind it and shed off the house. The end is near at this point. I finally came, I believe it was on, may have been on Monday morning sometime. I came to Craig and I said, Craig, it's time. We need a punch list. Let's start developing a punch list. So we grabbed a piece of cardboard, a Sharpie, the ever-present Sharpie on the job, and we developed our punch list, put it on the refrigerator. You know, this really helps. Developing the punch list says we have a finite goal in sight. Check off the boxes, and we get there. And so now we are coasting to a finish. It's more time to smile. Our trenchmen start to ease up, and they're going to return back to the cities now. October 9th, the contest begins, and that's the real excitement. You know, here's what our house looked like on day one. Opening ceremony, presented very well. Decks all in place. By the way, I need to comment back upon our legendary performance. I'll get to that in a moment. let me continue on. This was our tour team that arrived. Basically, I think starting on Tuesday, our tour team arrived to start going through how are they going to be managing the tours and the opening ceremony. We had an opportunity to meet with Senator Klobuchar, at least some of the students did. And then finally, our house was out there for the public to see. What you're looking at here on the upper right is the bifacial solar panels that generate electricity. And then our house. Patricia's cooking on Friday. Thank you. This is the embodiment of the recipes in front of you, all right, right here. Apparently, that went off very well. We did very well in that particular contest. And tours, constant tours, people just lined up to see these houses. It was fantastic. But note, there was a lot of rain. That doesn't necessarily lend itself to good solar energy development, all right? The weather was a challenge. But the curiosity of the visitors was particularly engaging. I was usually stationed on the porch, and people would have already come through the house to see it. We had all kinds of visitors, but I really have to say I enjoyed the kids the most. Because of their curiosity, the girls here, it was wonderful because they came out and I asked them, well, what'd you think? Oh, it's like so cool, you know? And they were just going on and on. They were gushing, and I heard this, and I said, I needed a picture of them. So I just grabbed it. And, of course, we had one alumni come and show up. And I thought, our program's only 12 years old. We've got an alumni in D.C. He came to see our house. That's great. That means we're going somewhere. I really like that. I was the one that normally talked about this weather-beaten wall and floor construction mock-ups because people were interested in how was this house built? How did you achieve an R50 wall and an R70 roof? Numbers that were almost unheard of. But while we were doing this, the contest loomed. And Joe Messier, he was like the ship's captain. He was sort of the commissioning team leader, and he was responsible for making all these systems work, making sure all the contests ran, and things weren't running exactly smoothly. We never had a chance to test, and that was going to be his passion, was getting into the test. That's where he was going to shine. Well, Joe, your test is ongoing right now. And actually, I know this was a picture that was particularly poignant. I think he was a little frustrated. This may have been taken at the time that we actually found out that one whole string of our photovoltaics had a poor connection and was not generating any electricity. Ah, okay. Well, testing. And then a lot of people would say, what are those barrels? They do what? All right. The siding, great color. That's sort of a detailed shot of what the siding looks like. And then finally, the lighting. Oh my gosh, the lighting was fantastic. And you know, there's almost no better way to accent that lighting than when it's wet outside, because the reflection and the specular aspects of the house are really remarkable. I made a special effort to go out and see this at night while it was raining. And then comes the contest, the delivery of the contest, and the results. And we were this was our first place win. And the excitement was certainly there. The object on the right, a glass vase with 5 100-watt light bulbs. Folks, that was our budget. That's what we ran the house on, the lighting, 500 watts. That's what got us first place, to show that it actually can be done. All right? Finally, we get down towards the end of the contest. It's Friday morning now after the following week, October 16th. It's the last day of the contest. It's also the awards ceremony. And at this point, I have to tell you that the destiny of the winner was not known. We didn't know who the winner was. We knew who was sort of crowding up at the top. Was it going to be California, who was nipping at the heels? Was it going to be Illinois? Was it, in fact, going to be Germany? The results of the net metering had not been known yet. The results of the engineering contest had not been known. But yet, they were going to march all these students into the main tent, and we were going to go through this award ceremony. So we had our flag and 20 students march in. It was quite an interesting sight, as you can see. We had a gallery, you know, with a lot of TV cameras on the back, area for the students to jam in, and then of course the stage off to your left here, which you can't really see. And it was interesting because all these students were all jumbled in here, almost shoulder to shoulder into this tent, awaiting the results of the engineering contest. And of course, at this point, we get our second first. Now, I need to pause for a moment and tell you exactly how that happens, okay? How do they award? Well, the assistant director of the deputy secretary of energy gave the awards, and you'll see that in a moment. But they do it in typical, you know, contest fashion. Third place first, but not by naming the school, but by saying, what are the characteristics of that house? Well, third place house has, you know, it has this kind of a characteristic, and it has a little bit of these, and a little bit, and we're sitting to ourselves saying, well, we have that, we have that, and then all of a sudden he says something else that we don't have, and we realize, well, it's not us. Second place, same thing, all right? Second place, announcing the, you know, the qualities of the house, we have that, we have that, we don't have that. And then finally, comes down to the first place, and he says, well, we're looking for an integrated, a house that has an integrated design. We have that. That has a remarkable use of bifacial solar PV panels. We have that. And Ann Johnson, meanwhile, is sitting there back there. just literally like this. Okay? And you know, everybody in our team, and just in this crowd of students, is thinking, oh, finally, when he says, and this school has a remarkable desiccant system, it was, okay, it was a silent, okay, because it technically hadn't been announced by this time, but we knew at that point we had it because we were the only ones that had a desiccant system of any of the teams that were there. And that's a remarkable story all on its own. And so anyway, we got our first place in engineering. Finally, Friday, raining like the band outside for 2 days. This was where we had 2 inches of rain. Crowds of people storming through the house. Tours were now closed for that Friday until later on the afternoon. It's finally time to relax. Who cares how the house is operating? Fling open the doors, okay? Across the way, the Puerto Ricans were dancing on their deck. Doors wide open. You know, we let the air just basically flow right in. We had time to get, one of our Shona Mosites, our interior designer. You know, she was very concerned about her appearance, the nails. You know, she couldn't find a file. She was asking everybody for a nail file. She finally found the grit and the grout. All right, it seemed to work very well. We had an opportunity to spend some time with Don Shelby. He came to Washington, D.C. He was a very staunch supporter of our project. We had a chance to just casually to sit in the living room with Don and just sort of chat it up. He was wonderful. He spent some time talking with Peter Lehman, the designer of our desiccant system. And I sort of am quoting him directly. He said, so what exactly is this desiccant system? Can you describe this on camera? Well, we will. Okay. We have the link to the WCCO broadcast that evening that I'm going to take you to quickly because it's worth seeing again.
The University of Minnesota has wrapped up its first ever solar decathlon competition in Washington, D.C. And tonight in Project Energy, Don Shelby and photojournalist Sean Skinner report from the nation's capital on the U's spectacular finish.
They call it the Icon House. The lighting load for the entire building is equivalent to 5 standard light bulbs. Of the 10 events in the solar decathlon, lighting design was the first place finish for the Minnesota team, which had never competed before. It has taken 2 years, 100 students, 20 faculty members, and millions of dollars to create a home that is market viable, meaning people would want to buy it and live in it, and to operate on solar power alone. Early this morning, with all teams present, the Department of Energy announced the winner of the biggest single event at the competition.
Please join me in congratulating our first place winner in engineering, Minnesota.
U of N student Peter Lehman accepted the award in an understated Minnesota fashion.
Culmination of a lot of work. Everyone has done a lot of work, but thank you. Appreciate it very much.
I was absolutely thrilled. I knew our team could do it.
Ann Johnson, overall project manager and civil engineering faculty.
And when our team was announced, I think I screamed the loudest of anyone.
Minnesota beat German engineering.
I am so proud.
Team Germany won top honors again this year, the second time it's done that. It created a house that was virtually all solar, The roof and all exterior walls were made of solar collectors. But what attracted the judge's attention, specifically, was an invention of a University of Minnesota undergrad who built from scratch a desiccant system. Basically, a huge energy-efficient dehumidifier.
Your regular air conditioner works very hard when it tries to dehumidify as well as cool the air. So this makes that more efficient and you save some net energy there.
For its first time in competition against the best schools in the world, Team Minnesota is ecstatic with its fifth place finish. Now the question is whether the university will be back in 2 years, going for the gold, maroon style.
It won 2 of the 10 events, including the most prestigious engineering award handed out today. Now they're going to tear this house down and move it back to Minnesota. And the next thing you may see for the Icon House is right out there in the front yard, a for sale sign. With Sean Skinner, I'm Don Shelby in Washington, D.C. for WCCO Television News.
Thanks, Don. And Don and Sean sent us
Okay. I know you needed to see that because you needed the excitement and you needed to witness how a beautiful sight it was to have 2 crystal awards here, the first place for lighting and the first place for engineering. And the rest of the awards identified the 2 third place awards. And then just some images of the house, how it sort of looked from the inside. It was quite remarkable. That lamp, by the way, over the dining table is really called a barcode lamp, and I secretly thought that that perhaps might hold the cost of our house. Somebody scanned it, they'd probably figure out what it exactly cost. The back porch, if you will, looking from the kitchen. And then finally, late in the day on Sunday, October 18th, the crowds are now gone. All right? It's time to smile, rest. And I think there's a near disability here. I think they were entitled to sit in these seats in the Metro. Finally, deconstruction, 5 a.m., Monday, October 19th, is when we really got started. We had to clean the house out overnight in the morning. The drills came out. We had to separate the modules and basically pull the whole house apart again, piece by piece, panel by panel, piece of deck by piece of deck. Close to midnight on Monday, October 19th, really our first big day, this is a group of the trenchmen. We didn't have as many students. We only had about 15 people deconstructing the house. We had about 30 or 35 constructing. So it went apart a lot faster. Tuesday, October 20th, basically, the entire house is gone. All right, it's basically disassembled at this point, pulled apart in its modules, and here you can kind of see how complex these elements are as they come apart. It's sort of funny and ironic to see these elements now sitting off on their own, you know, kind of dwarfed, where just a moment ago we had crowds running through as the sunset comes by the Washington Monument, and as we're wrapping our last elements of the house in shrink wrap. We owe a lot on this project to 2 gentlemen from Murphy Rigging, who were our friends, our allies throughout the entire process. When we were both in the reuse center in the St. Paul site, they came to D.C., they came back to help us unload. Jeff Ledberg and Tom Dibble, they were great with our students, and they really knew how to handle these cranes. And where it is today? Well, it's awaiting a final place, but here it is. There is our house, boxed up in the reuse center, packaged up in shrink wrap, waiting for its next destiny. And that is a little bit uncertain at this point. The hope is it will stay on the University of Minnesota campus, maybe be part of the Bell Museum's upcoming sustainability exhibit, and perhaps find a use for a buyer, or maybe for the right price, somebody will be persuaded to take the whole thing. Special thank you goes to our fearless leader, Ann Johnson. Ever optimistic, I might say, and a fantastic project mom, too. By the way, she took care of a lot of details on this project that a lot of students, quite frankly, would not have been able to handle. She masterfully managed the project throughout. Of course, to all the students, the faculty, the advisors, administration, photographers, everybody that made this project, our sponsors, my gosh, we had a lot of sponsors on this project. They all came through for this project in the end and pulled it together. And finally, my wife. 2 years, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Woo, I'm exhausted just watching that, and so proud and so impressed. Anne, you're in the back of the room. Let us. There she is. Congratulations. Wow. And the students, once again, tell us who you are.
Stand up.
Yeah, please.
You guys had a lot to do.
There you go. All right. And Patrice, again, congratulations, all of you. Wow, this was really, what a great story. It is exhausting, and it's to listen to it, and it really does make me proud, very impressed. But let's open it up to your questions that you might have for Peter. Nice neighborhood, by the way, you guys decided to put your house in. What questions do you have for Peter or anybody else? You got it?
Tell us a little bit about the budgeting and the costs.
Good question. A very common question. Actually, the Department of Energy required us to put a cost estimate together for the project based on its market suitability. In other words, if this house were to be replicated on a mass scale, where would we fall? And it would be either, you know, $1 sign, $2 signs, $3 signs, or $4 signs, I think was the category. Ours was in the $3 sign category, which was $450 to $650. The actual cost of our house is somewhere probably around... I mean, if you looked at the actual cost of the house, it's probably in the $500,000, $550 range, something like that. We had a lot of donated materials. The economics of it are out of proportion with what was created. If it was produced on a mass scale, it certainly wouldn't have been done to break down and move. So that was a big, very complex part of this. So I know you can gain some efficiencies with doing it again. So.
Peter?
Great question. Oh. Yeah, in the back here?
Actually, I wanted to. Okay. I just want to make sure I couldn't rebut Don Shelby on the news, but I wanted to let you know this project did not cost millions of dollars.
Right.
That was really troublesome for me to hear that on the news. Our final budget for the whole project was about $950,000. So you have to understand that in addition to buying the garage door, the house, faculty time, et cetera, I did have to get the house to Washington and back. We had to house students for almost a month. We had tradespeople out there with us. So I just want to make sure everybody knows we did come in under budget, and it was not even $1 million.
All right? On time, under budget. We love it.
Yes, on time and under budget. Yes, great.
That's great.
Question in the back here.
That's great. Yes, I have a question. And I've been asking this for months, and I still don't have the answer. I was wondering, how does it break the ceramic tile on the floor of the bathroom in transporting this module and seal that joint when you got it to Washington?
Well, interesting story. And by the way, the speaker is a heckler. He's my partner. Bill Bartolik. Thank you for that question, Bill. And it was one that was, you saw the slide where Shona was doing her nails and there was a cut line right through the middle of the bathroom. Well, luckily we had small tiles, you know, inch by inch, and they were recycled glass. It was not an easy trick, and actually we only lost two one-inch square tiles, and that was just in the corner where the module of the roof met the module of the wall. We dinged it, all right? And luckily we had some tiles with us, and we replaced it. But the joint came together quite nicely, and when it does find its final home, we're going to tear that joint out and put tile back in its place so you won't see it. So it worked very well.
Hey, Peter, could you talk a little bit about what was learned through all this for the future of building these kinds of sustainable homes and energy-efficient homes and the like?
Oh, my
gosh.
What
are the lessons out of this?
The novel is now being compiled. Okay. But the lessons
learned... The Odyssey,
learned, huh? Yes, the Odyssey. The lessons learned is actually something that we're making an active effort right now to compile. Because if you go through a project like this and you cannot catalog the lessons that you've learned, nobody gains from the history of it in a meaningful way. And we are planning to put an application in. We're working on it right now for the 2011 solar decathlon. So the lessons learned are abundant. But I think for me, I think it'll come down to starting construction when we need to start construction, knowing that the 80-20 rule applies, quite frankly. We need to budget more time. We have to get the testing done. We have to make sure we stick with that plan, and we have to hold all of the students accountable to those schedules all the way through, and I think that will ensure our future success. That, along with about, 50,000 other lessons learned of a variety of natures. So.
What about though for our society? What do we come away from this believing about the future of building really energy efficient homes and so forth?
Great question. This was my first visit to the Solar Decathlon. When I was in college, when I was these students' age, I worked on a solar project, but it was a solar thermal boiler. Okay, we were building solar farms to heat water in a little beehive, and I used to climb the tower to this beehive, and I thought, well, the future of solar is, you know, mass-produced kind of applications where we're generating hot water. And so it really didn't catch on with me quite as it should have. In some ways, I am a product of the 70s, and I should have caught on a lot sooner. But I am fascinated that this younger generation is grabbing onto this concept with gusto, and that this whole sustainability movement is, including, you know, dealing with alternative forms of energy such as solar, is making such inroads. What do I think is the future of it? I think the future is, well, no pun intended, very bright. Okay, I think that the cost of photovoltaics are going to come down. They are constantly coming down now. They are going to get to a point where they are achievable. I think the concept where we could achieve net zero houses, I mean, when you think about it on a global basis, imagine if everybody's house did not consume but instead contributed power like the Germans did. They got 150 points. They got a 50-point bonus because they put the maximum of power back into the grid. Well, their house was a power box, you know? I mean, it was everywhere. Is that the right solution? I don't think so. But just one final comment on that. The comments of people coming through, visitors coming through the house that had gone and seen a lot of the other houses, some of which looked, you know, a little out there, came through our house and they would say, this house is just so livable. And in fact, the engineering award credited our use of an integrated design. So if there's a way that, as architects, we can creatively integrate these solar technologies into a house that looks good and feels right and feels like home, then we will succeed.
What do you think are the couple biggest barriers?
To solar energy?
Yeah, right.
Investment. Think about... I mean, I don't want to go on to a sort of a political platform right now, but...
Oh, it's been done in here before.
Okay. All right. And we have a learned audience and probably a...
Oh, very learned audience.
Very learned audience, a lot of opinions. Well, you know, I might digress a little bit, but I think about the Cash for Clunkers program, which we just imparted. No matter what your opinion is of it, that was an incentive that got some rust buckets and some not-so-rusty buckets off our roads and into something that was perhaps marginally more efficient. Well, imagine if we could establish some stimulus programs for that. My wife drives a Prius. One of the reasons we bought a Prius was a tax incentive. And we bought it when we still had 1 year left on the tax incentive. So we took advantage of that. That's one way. And now you've seen what's happened with the Prius. It's become mainstream. If we can create some targeted incentives, I think, for the industry, I think that will be a key where we can finally glom onto it. But our biggest challenge is not what the Europeans enjoy or don't enjoy. Europeans enjoy a very high cost of, you know, energy. We are still in the lap of luxury by having low-cost power, low-cost fuel in this country. And until that barrier gets raised to the point where it becomes, you know, a challenge for us, that's when I think some of these alternatives are really going to kick in big time.
It's interesting. Question in the back here. Sherry, you got one?
Right here in the center.
Sorry.
Yeah, I was just wondering if there's anywhere that the general public can access information about the technology and ideas that were incorporated in this house or the other houses that were in the contest?
Yes, everything, because the Department of Energy was so gracious to give us, I believe it was $150,000 grant, $100,000 grant? Okay, what's 50 grand when you're talking about? Anyway. $100,000 grant. They own the rights to all the property. And as a matter of fact, the Solar Decathlon website, if I believe it's www.solardecathlon.org, that's right, org, is a great site because you can sort of get connected to each one of the school's websites. And then they're as they're continuing updating the site after the contest now, you'll have access to drawings and some of the technology and stuff like that. So it is available.
Terrific. In the center here again.
The house looks like it's a one-bedroom house. What are the possibilities of making it larger for a larger family?
Upscale, okay? And I don't mean that in an economic sense, but I mean that in literally a scaling sense. We had rules. We had an 800-square-foot limitation on our envelope. Our house was actually 560 square feet of livable area, which is why we have one bedroom, or I'd like to say one half of a bedroom, because it was very, very small, and the kind of bedroom that I would gather to say none of us could sleep in, because it was literally just slightly larger than the bed itself, making it challenging for anybody but students to get in and out of in the middle of the night. That was a question we brought up constantly, but how could we add on more houses? Well, in fact, the next generation of solar decathlon houses increased the size from 800 to 1,000 square feet. And I think the idea there is to recognize that we have to find a way to make this thing more marketable, and size is going to matter. And so you can take the same concept and upsize it a little bit to add some more rooms. But the integration concepts, the solar photovoltaics, all that stuff can still be adapted to that design. So it's just a matter of scale.
So one bedroom, 900,000, sort of like an apartment in New York City or something, right?
Yeah, something like that. Price is probably about the same, too, yes.
Right here.
Of the 50 teams, how many got their houses completed?
Well, there are 20 teams.
20.
All of the houses were able to compete. I believe, I don't remember this for a fact, but I believe there were two or three teams that could not compete on the first day. And this is a good story because it makes me feel good. When we got done early, all right? We were the fourth team to get our rough-in inspections done. Last team to arrive, fourth team to get our rough-in inspections, seventh team to get grid tied, all right? Which is remarkable. We had time left over. Several of our students went out and helped University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and I believe Penn State finished their houses, all right? So not everybody finished, but everybody could compete. And that was good, and that was a remarkable, remarkable story.
Neat. Other questions? Right over here. Hang on just a second. Fred, let me bring you a mic here.
The solar panels now, what's the lifespan of these things?
I'm not a technical expert on them, but I hear it's fairly long. We used basically a flat plate collector for the solar thermal, which is one of the simplest technologies out there. It's been around for quite a while. It's got a certain amount of longevity. The photovoltaic panels have, I understand, a fairly long life cycle, perhaps on the order of 25, 30 years, something like that. The bifacials, the ones where you can see in and see out, those are really a new product on the market. And by the way, that's where we're going to see a lot more of solar energy coming, is from that bifacial kind of an industry where you're applying photovoltaics to other materials, like shingles. That's the latest one now, is applying them to shingles. We're going to see a lot more of that. It's still, a lot of us still new. It's being tested, but the marketplace will do that testing and eventually we'll achieve the longevity that we need. But right now, I think it's fairly reliable. I don't know the exact answer, though.
First of all, you gave a great talk. It was really entertaining, and you have a great presentation style, so thank you for that. Also, congratulations to yourself and everybody else that participated. My question is similar to the gentleman that just asked, the longevity of the panels. What about maintenance costs overall? What happens in 10 years if I want to paint it, redo the kitchen, redo the bathroom, normal things that house owners go through?
This house is going to degrade at the same rate that your house is degrading. But it also has the ability to be remodeled for the same way that you would remodel your house, and hopefully with some new materials and materials that make sense. There's nothing unusual or special about this. The siding, what we use, the Trespa material that I mentioned, is actually quite an interesting product, and it appears to have a long shelf life. It is actually a derivative of the countertop market, kitchen countertops, these faux, kind of like the Silestone derivative. That's really where this product came from, and they've gotten this application now for a rain screen concept where you're applying it ahead of your actual wall surface and allowing water to come in behind. That is expected to be a long life. One of the advantages, of course, about that siding for repainting is theoretically it's a permanent coating. I don't really trust that concept in the building industry. There's no such thing, in my opinion, as permanent. It's just whether it's going to last longer than you and I. All right? And that's kind of the bottom line.
What do you mean remodel every 10 years, 6 years or so, right? Question over here.
I'm curious about how you're handling the... my husband and I built a house in the 80s when there was an energy crunch at that time, and we tried to use as much passive solar as possible. But it sounded like you really insulated really everything really tight. And I was wondering how your engineers worked this through to have a healthy breathing air inside.
Again, not being an engineer, I can only tell you that Peter Lehman, I mean, part of his desiccant system is to dry air. We also had an energy recovery system that was, you know, bringing fresh air in. So air in a very, very tight house, I mean, in the absence of our house, you have to have good air exchange. You have to have good mechanical systems that will circulate that air and keep it fresh. Combine that with some of the other passive techniques such as opening windows, okay? But well-insulated opening windows. And then, of course, a very, very tight envelope. You know, our 50 wall and an R70 roof is pretty astounding when you consider we got that in about an 8.5 or a 9-inch dimension. You know, it's pretty good. And that's a passive technique as well. It's good insulation. So, you know, I think there's a lot... energy solutions come from a variety of sources. We have to be thinking in Minnesota passively because, quite frankly, as I was telling everybody that was looking at those little display models about how the walls were built, I was telling them, all of this stuff is available at Home Depot. All right? That is already accessible to you. The photovoltaics may be beyond your reach and that of your banker, okay? But there's a lot of stuff that you can do that makes good, sound economic sense that will pay dividends almost immediately.
Is that a follow-up question?
How about the windows? Who did the windows, and you know what kind of windows are they?
The windows are great. It was a great story. Marvin Windows supplied the windows. They were a great supporter of it. Bill Marvin, who recently passed away, we were invited up to the Marvin factory when we were considering the windows, and we got a tour, got to meet Bill Marvin. A big University of Minnesota booster himself. They supplied the windows, and they gave us a lot of sort of technical advice. They helped us with our kind of confirming some of our energy modeling on how the windows had to operate. And these, let me just tell you, these are windows on steroids. Okay. Most of them, not all of them, are triple glazed, which is going to be the wave of the future. Getting that third pane of glass in there makes a big difference. It's got special coatings on it that allow us to modulate the kind of light and the kind of radiation we want to keep in the house, the kind of radiation we want to go through the windows, and the kind of radiation we want to reject. We can modulate that now by having three panes of glass instead of two. We've basically doubled the number of surfaces that we can put coatings on. And Marvin, in their R&D department, actually wanted to supply us a window that was still under development, but they couldn't give it to us. It's still kind of a secret. And so, but they were giving us the next best thing. And so we had these Magnum series double hungs. We had some casements, some awnings. All triple glazed, except for the kitchen windows and the west window, which had a electrochromic glass in it, double pane, with basically a tinting. You press a button, you put a little few electrons in there, which came from our PV, put it on the window, and all of a sudden it tints. So in the morning sun, we can reject a warm winter sun out of those that glass, same for the west side. But when the sun passes over, we can flick the switch and take the sunglasses off. Marvelous technology. The engineering team, the jury, really recognized that as well. And a lot of comments from the jury were on those use of that electrochromic glass as well. So,
during the contest phase, did they use any criteria about what the practicality of the materials were and also the attractiveness, you know, the marketability of materials? You know, because that's going to be one piece of this is it's taking it from the icon to the market. And part of that is practicality of can you get this out into the market and, you know, where it's cost effective? And the other part is it attractive? Is this something that the public is going to want to have?
Good question. I would offer to you, each one of you, to go to the Solar Decathlon website and look at what the other 20 houses or other 19 houses look like, and ask yourself, are all these marketable? I will tell you that not all of them are. Spain, with a big rotating roof element that leaks, by the way, it's just not practical. Beautiful to look at, not very practical. A number of technologies and techniques were being used that were really unique. Virginia Tech, marvelous, interesting, dynamic, very futuristic house made of silver metal on the outside with an LED light display that was actually on the trailer when they pulled in at night, so you'd see this display. They didn't get the lighting award. But, you know, to that point, what's practical, you know? I think what we did in the parting comments that we got was really, this house is so livable. So I think from our sense, I think we were successful in the marketability and the outreach of our project, and I think that was reflected in our scores. And so I think the jurors could see that our house was transportable. It was translatable into a model that is replicable. Same with the Illinois house. Very, very simple design. They took second. Almost got the Germans. Very, very close. Came right down to the wire. There's a very simple house, but other houses all over the map. So I think we very much succeeded in that respect, yes.
Neat. Question over here.
Yeah. How does the basement concept fit into the total picture of the solar house, be it concrete or a wood type of a foundation?
You're interested in buying the house, we'll design one for you. Actually, the basement is obviously a concept that we could not develop with this house because we're putting it on the mall. To do so would have run interference with the metro. We do need to put this house with a basement because that shed, that remote shed that has all of our tanks, cannot sit outside in the winter. It has to be in a warm environment. So the idea was that shed now gets transported into the basement. All that equipment is now closely tied directly below where it needs to be. We'll tend to operate probably a little more efficiency with less loss going out to the shed. So this house would have to be adapted for a basement. Probably, you know, a conventional basement design. The only way we could get to it in this house is with a storm shelter access, you know, from the outside. You know, Wizard of Oz, you know, open the door. Kind of a thing, so.
Just a couple of quick questions left here. One in the back, and then over to Marguerite.
What impressed you about the German house?
You know,
he's a bitter loser, isn't he? He's having trouble coming up with this.
Interesting question. My cousin lives in Darmstadt, or lives near Darmstadt, used to live in Darmstadt, and lives not too far away. And so my wife and I just visited him this summer, and I sent him a picture of the German house when I got there, and said this is from the Technische Universität Darmstadt, you know, something he's known familiar with. It is a box. It's marvelously creative in so many ways. They took every advantage you could possibly take in pushing the limits of the envelope. Maximum height, maximum exposure, maximum surface area to put towards the sun. And yet, it was very German. You know what I'm saying? It sort of fits sort of the German culture, very contemporary, very much out there. And when we were in Germany, I saw a lot of houses that looked like that. Maybe not quite like that. So I would say that it was very successful for Germany. I can't see this as being your neighbor, all right? But there were a lot of technical details. I mean, when they were assembling their house, you could see the exterior of their wall. They didn't have all those little shingles on. And it looked almost like an automaton, like a robot. You saw the steel structure and all these wires. Remember, every one of those little tiles they had on the outside had to have wires to it, right? So they really, I thought they were going to kick our butt in engineering, to tell you the truth, because you look at that stuff and you feel so intimidated, you know? And the Germans, engineering, that sort of is synonymous. So, but it was a great house. They had some very unique features. They were very close to the ground, and they weren't prepared for 2 inches of rain and all the crowds, so their floor was starting to buckle. So, you know, we at least didn't have that problem.
Next year. 2 years?
3 years.
3 years. Last question we have time for over here.
Oh, well, I have found this very interesting, but one thing, obviously right now, this house financially is out of reach of a lot of families. Do you think with more building, and maybe do you think government support will be there so that this kind of house can be built a lot more broadly?
The answer to that question is unequivocally yes. Remember that anytime you engage in an experiment, anytime you develop a prototype, you're making an investment in the future, a very heavy, costly investment in the future. I consider this to be a prototype. It's also a prototype for the University of Minnesota. And I say that because right now we're writing the grant for the next solar decathlon. And we've sort of settled on an objective. And I don't think it's too premature to say that it is our intent to partner up with the Habitat for Humanity. Okay? And I think if we can couple some of the concepts of what made this house successful, but now turn our design energies on making it affordable, accessible, and have a good end use, we will have succeeded. So I expect to see you here in 2011, and we'll answer that question. Okay?
All right.
Thank you.
You know, we're so impressed by and proud of the students for what they've done here, but I must say they are so fortunate to have teachers like you and like Ann Johnson, and there's people like you all over the university, too, so it's just a great place. But thank you so much for just a really engaging talk tonight. This was really interesting. I want to invite you to, in December, is it already November? Yes. Join us again. Our speaker in December will be Nora Paul, and she is the founding director of the university's Institute for New Media Studies. Nora's going to talk with us about the current state of this country's newspapers. Who reads, right? And a new model, perhaps, for delivering the news. So, in the meantime, hope you have a happy Thanksgiving. And, Peter, thanks again, and thank you, Ann.
Thank you.